Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, another great show dealing with the spiritual implications of individual versus group karma, and this is part two. No, it's not a rerun. It's part two. For those of you who were listening last week, I kind of squeaked into the end that we were going to do a part two because I just ran out of time, and I didn't even get to complete the last, few concepts that I was talking about. I apologize for that because it might have confused you since I couldn't complete it. You might have said, well, where is he going with that? Well, tonight we'll be able to take the time to be able to get that done. If you want to call in, you can, and the phone numbers are right before you, somewhere on the website there. So I don't even have to repeat them or anything like that. If you're in the U.S., call us. If you're in Canada, call us. Both of those are toll-free numbers. Any place else in the world, well, it's on your dime, but you can still call. And I would love to hear from you if you want to do that. Now, let me tell you something about last week's show, so we can kind of tie these together. I'm just going to very briefly give out those definitions again, the ones that I always cherish and love to say. And tonight I thought I'd sort of do an abbreviated version. I'm not going to go through everything I said last week, because after all, you can always go back and listen to last week's show. And if you'd already heard it, you can say, well, I know it now. Okay, so here's the deal. What do I mean by karma, and what do I mean by individual versus group? And group includes all kinds of groups, from a few people to a nation to a world. So it could be vast numbers of people. Okay, so what do I mean by karma, though? Karma is the effects of separating cause from effect. And it happens because when we do something, the immediate results may not be apparent. And the reason for that is that time itself is separated from space where we hang out, which is right here in the physical universe. And so it doesn't exactly match the effects from the causes, because when we try to do something or when we do accomplish doing something, there is a lag in what takes place versus what we initiate. And this is what most people would consider to be normal. Well, this normality that we experience here is actually it's caused by time being separated from space. It's kind of an Einsteinian thing. And it is not the same in other dimensions of time and space other than the physical. And it actually changes considerably. So what we consider to be normal karma here, where it could take more than a living lifetime for the effects to come completely back to a person, it can. It isn't always like that. In other dimensions, especially those considerably more distant from where we exist, the karma could be almost, by our standards, instantaneous in comparison, because time is much more connected with time and space. And in actuality, from a dimension called the intuitional, some people prefer the word Buddhic, dimension and above, time is fully connected in at least one of three ways with space. And consequently, karma really takes on a very different kind of thing. Although there is some remnants of it visible, it is way different than what we experience here. Okay, so now we kind of got an idea what karma is. Karma is the separation of an effect from a cause. And it isn't punishment. There's nobody standing around saying, oh, let's get them, you know. Because it is really more a result of the physics of time and space than anything else. But also, there's a difference in terms of individual versus different sizes of groups. And as I defined them last week, if most of the effects, the majority, more than 50%, okay, of the effects from a specific cause come from an individual, okay? So an individual does something, and most of the effects, more than 50%, that are coming from just that one individual doing something, that's individual karma. You see how simple that is? That is really pretty straightforward. Bet you didn't get that before. Yeah, that's the way it is. And if it's group karma, then whatever size group we're talking about, let's say it's your neighborhood, all right, the karma of your neighborhood, say there's 50 people involved in your neighborhood. It may be a pretty big number, but okay, maybe not. And they all do something. And in doing so, they contribute more than 50% to the effects of whatever it is they do. Then that's the karma of that group of people in your neighborhood. But it isn't the karma of your nation, because it only is represented by about 50 people in your neighborhood. But let's say that the effects come from an entire nation, like war or some other big thing like that. Well, then the effects are coming from the nation, and that would be national karma. And it even can go all the way out to the world, to Earth, or our world. And if the effects are coming from everybody, 50% plus one person, collectively are causing the effect, then that would be world karma. Now, what kinds of things would be world karma? Well, some people will claim that there's global warming, and that the effects are coming from all of us in the world giving off greenhouse gases and other various issues, but that's at least a major part of it, they think. And because of that, there is this global warming, and therefore that would be world karma, you see? Not national, because there's no one nation that I'm aware of that is producing over 50% of the greenhouse gases. So then you would say, oh, now it's a world karma thing. Following it? Good. Now, we'll continue on. So that was last week's beginning show issues, and hopefully we're all on board with it. For those of you who heard me last week, it might be a little bit clearer this week, maybe, because after all, I try to present a little different ways of explaining these things when I can. Okay, so what were some of the issues that I really couldn't get into last week that I want to cover? The first is, and I didn't even get to finish this whole part of it, dealing with some political issues that were going on in the country and draw together. But I won't go back to that, because I'd have to start all over again with what I was talking about. And instead, I'll just go ahead and tell you that because we're out of balance in ourselves, and I did mention parts of this, in the way we sense, our sacral center, which is called the fourth type of energy center, some people call it array energy. It doesn't really matter what the name is. It's the stuff that the center is made out of that gives us a sense. That sense is weak, and it's peculiarly weak in comparison to our throat center. Some people prefer the word chakra. If you like that word, that's fine. And that third ray energy composed in that has been in focus for like 650, 675 years, and it's really strong. But in its strength, people have abused it. In all of the bodies that this center exists in, if you're human, that's at least three bodies. They're called the monastic, or mental, the astral, and of course our etheric physical, the one we're most used to here. But we have these other subtle senses besides. And so these centers are represented in each one of those bodies, and collectively they perform a tremendous amount of sensing. But here's the rub. Okay, we got a very strong throat chakra, except many people have abused it. And in the abuse, what it does is it communicates, it helps us to understand things about our own civilization, it helps us be creative in our civilization, to extend our bodies through other living things and minerals and everything around us, so we can build a civilization. It's a great thing to have this, but many people have abused it. They have used it selfishly. In their selfish use, this has resulted in quite substantial levels of karma, meaning effects that haven't even come to us yet, from causes that were unfortunately quite selfish over the last few decades of people's lives, particularly, and in some cases, their whole lifetime. This problem that we're facing, therefore, is like a buildup of karma, both individual but also quite a bit of national and some world karma that is coming towards us and hitting us. No kidding. Some of it is producing some very serious problems, including a destruction, or we'll say a disintegration of some of our civilization. You might say, well, I could still drive my car, I still live in a nice house. Maybe. But a lot of people are losing their houses, and a lot of people are finding it difficult to drive the car because the cost of it is exorbitant, and it is for some people, a polluting source and other issues. So we have these things going on, and they are accelerating, and they're out of balance with the other center that has diminished since 1675 A.D., the sacral center. And that sacral center would have allowed us to see that we're living too materially and we're not spiritual enough. Spiritual means we don't think like our creator enough. And so this is causing an even worse rub. First of all, we're selfish in the way that we use material things, especially in building our civilization. And then the worst rub is that we also aren't balanced virtually in any of the ways that we would tend to offset and grow from and change the problems that our throat chakra are causing, because these two centers are really kind of out of kilter with each other. Because the sacral center only grows when it is being used in a spiritual way, because there's no extra added energy being focused in on our planet, whereas the throat chakra, that has been growing even if you were selfish, and will continue to until the fall sometime of 2012. I know that's that big year. But this has been, honestly, this has been around for a long time in much literature. Mayas aside, and other people, Mayans aside, and other people. So here we have this most interesting comparison. And unfortunately, the bottom line of it is that we now are in a circumstance where the next few years we're in the most disparity between these two centers, resulting in some pretty toxic, really nasty kinds of things taking place. We are tremendously imbalanced in living our lives materially in comparison to living our lives spiritually. This is a great difficulty because we are at the same time getting struck by fairly large amounts of karma in the way we have been living. And some of this karma is causing people to lose their houses, their 401ks, and other kinds of savings programs, IRAs. And it's leading to people being unemployed in a depressed economy on a world scale. And if you live in the United States, of course, here in the U.S., this is fairly serious stuff. And I'm sure most of you out there are aware of the serious nature of what we're dealing with. Worse than possibly the immediacy of those crises is the fact, in my opinion, that the governments, and particularly the U.S. government, is not necessarily responding in ways that include a spiritual balance to their thought process. Now, this is kind of bringing us up to some of the stuff I was saying at the end of the last week's show. No, I'm not going to go ahead, and I'm not trying to speak badly of any particular political figure here. I'm talking about, as a whole, the government, and I'm not talking about this particular administration. I'm talking about the last administration as well. I'm not saying that this is only limited to those people who have been in office for, like, the last 7 months or something like that. I'm saying that this is a continuation, but it seems to be maybe actually getting worse, not better, and that's a frightening thing because it's already pretty bad. And see, what is missing is this ability to balance out the thought of our Creator. And if we don't balance it, it becomes a destroyer to us and to life itself. That's a scary thing, isn't it? I'm going to explain that. I'm not going to leave you hanging with this today, because I got enough time to get into it. That's the reason I did part two. Okay, so how where is this thing all leading to then? Well, here's what we're facing, the real spiritual dilemma, without getting into all the political nitty-gritty things, which you can apply this to if you want. And that is that there are really two sides to the thought of our Creator, and the three parts to our Creator's mind. I'll name them, okay? The first part of the thought of our Creator is that it wants there to be life, and the life needs to emulate some aspects of what the Creator has in its nature, if it is to successfully grow and become more and more a part of the Creator, and to even become a Creator itself at various levels, of course, even at reaching the level someday of being a creator of a universe as marvelous as this universe is. So that's the first thing. It wants this life to be creative. It wants it to be free, not to be controlled by the thought or the will of the Creator. That's unusual for a lot of people to accept. And it also wants us to have a certain level of independence. Independence enough so that we can even choose, if we so desire, to reject our Creator and to become a thing that is called evil. So we could go in that direction if we want. That's how much freedom we really, really have, which is a huge amount if you think about it. Now, what are we not free to do? Well, one of the things we're not free to do is to forever avoid our own karma. If you're evil, you can delay it for significant periods of time, but you cannot inevitably avoid it. Yeah, that's kind of ominous, huh? It's good. I like that. And you're going to say, well, are you going to explain that? Maybe. Because that could be a whole other show, you see. But that's nonetheless the way it works. And so, here we are in this situation, which I find this intriguing, actually. That the first part of our Creator's thought, we'll call it spiritual thought because that's what it means, is this whole package. It isn't like one thing. It isn't just creativity. It isn't just freedom and liberty. It isn't just will. Will is, by the way, the consistency of choices. In other words, you constantly make the same choices. And it isn't just choices. And it isn't choices that limit the field of choice, which is the real accurate way of saying it. It isn't just that. It's all of those things. That's why it's so huge. It's so difficult for us to really grasp this because, after all, it's a half of our Creator's own thought. It's huge. And for some people, this part that I'm talking about, they're particularly sensitive to him, and they try to emulate it, and they may prescribe certain issues in their life to do certain things that will replicate it. They may be a proponent of it becoming a dominant issue, not only in their life, but in other people's lives. The problem is that it's only half of the Creator's thought. The other half is the following. The other half, to make a full, complete thought of the Creator, is love and inclusiveness, givingness. It has the elements of, we'll say, consciousness, which is the ability to expand our knowledge to things beyond what the knowledge is about. Ooh. And it is also the ability, we'll say, to plan, to give direction to the choices in the first part of our Creator's thought so that there is true meaning in the thought itself. Now, some of you are saying, well, yeah, that love part's really important, and if you're not a giving person, you might be very creative, but what if you're not giving? You see, that's why you got to join these. You have to be able to balance them. And if you don't balance them, they don't stay spiritual. They still exist as some thought, but not our Creator's thought. And then you run into problems. Now, I'm going to tell you a little secret. Now, I mentioned this before on a few shows. For those of you who are familiar with the U.S. political system, the people that claim to be of one of the major parties, which is Republicans, tend to move very strongly towards the first part, more towards the first part of the Creator's thought than do the Democrats. And in vice versa fashion, the opposite, the Democrats tend to move towards the second part. So you can see that's where the disparity is between these two major parties. And you could say, well, why can't somebody come up with something that just joins them together? Well, that's because our senses aren't working very well, and we're becoming more and more polarized rather than joining these very critical elements of our Creator's thought to become more spiritualized. So polarization is like anti-spiritualization. And so that's what our problem is. And it's not helping that the third ray is peaking while the fourth ray has been out so for so long, it's very wobbly and weak. Now it's starting to come back in focus, but it's nowhere near the effect in our lives as the third type of energy is. So our throat chakras are just so much stronger than our sacral centers in the average person. Now, this is not true of people who are living their life to try to balance these centers. They're called spiritually disciplined people. That's a good thing for them. But most people aren't doing that. So it's a bad thing for the rest of us because, you know, that's not good. Because if you got a lot of people running around who are favoring the throat chakra and virtually not using their sacral center, which gives a kind of reflective nature, makes people very concerned about finding the balance of these things, then you got a big problem. And we got a huge problem. I mean, we got a huge, huge problem. We have a lot of karma coming our way. We've got a political system that's ping-ponging back and forth with no kind of center point where the spiritual part of our Creator's thought is coming through. I mean, it's like, you have another election and go the other way. You know, maybe that'll solve the problem. Well, it doesn't solve the problem because the problem isn't solved by polarization. It's solved by spiritualization, by creating along lines of our Creator and giving along those lines. Now, I didn't go into the giving enough, and I will explain the difference here. Giving has very little to do with what most people think of as giving, because most of the giving people do is unwise. Unwise giving makes others more selfish and more dependent, and drives them further away from the first part of God's mind. They remember it's part of the second part we're giving us. And so it separates more rather than it produces what it should be doing, which is inclusiveness. It's paradoxical. And so those poor people that are being given to, so to speak, let's give to the poor. Let's give to people who are disadvantaged. Let's give to people who are sick. Let's give to people who are uneducated. Let's give to people who... Well, I could go on. I don't want to keep doing this. But the point is that if you just give, but you don't give wisely, you destroy rather than you help to be creative of God within them. That's a very important element, isn't it? I mentioned some of this last week. It's really important that if we're going to give, and I hope we all are going to give, many of us are giving, but maybe not feeling as though it's working, and it isn't. We need to give in a way which is judicious, wise, and brings other people into a state of giving as well, and it also provides them more of a state of creativity, purpose, choices, will, that they act upon. And if it doesn't do those things, then the giving is unwise. So if you give to people, say, on the typical concept of welfare, you give to people because, well, they just need it, you know, what the heck, they're not doing too well. The end result could be that they become more selfish, less creative, less exercise less choices in their life and become more destructive to themselves and even others. And it always results in karma on a national scale, if you're doing this on a national scale, that destroys the economy, that destroys neighborhoods, wipes out, can wipe out whole types and groups of people because we think it's a good thing to just give. Well, you got to give right. I might say don't give. I'm saying give more, but give wisely, you see. And see, this is where we have a problem. We go from the giving side in one period of time in this country, and then we go back to the, oh, let's really focus in on creativity and forget about the giving because it didn't work out. Look at all the people who suffered from it. And then we're selfish on that side. The way you're selfish on that side is you create, but you don't create so that others are better creators themselves. You create in ways in which you build up your companies and you build up all of your resources in a material sense, but you're not helping anybody else to do the same. You might be just literally imprisoning them from doing the same, making them into your little robots and making sure that they do a good assembly line in your plant. Well, that's not what is meant by a spiritual part of God's mind. That's a dark side. You have to be able to balance these. And we generally aren't getting it right. Creating enormous pressures on ourselves. Terrible karma is coming. Now, can we correct this? Of course we can. If we don't correct it, there won't be a countries that exist under this scenario. And evil will win out, and we'll have the worst cases in which everything is reversed. Instead of people even trying to do good, they'll try to be bad, and they'll do terrible things to each other. So we really do have to make these changes, and I mean like right away, because we're behind. And we need to do this in a way that's going to make sense. Okay? Are we there? Now, I want to talk about some practical things in the second half of the show. We're just about coming up to that time. And I want you to consider this. We stopped last week. I was talking about some of the political ramifications of our health care plan. And I don't even know if I got it. I don't think I got into cap and trade and all this stuff. And there's some really serious problems in the thinking and the reasoning that we're using for our major political and economic and everything, and particularly governmental decisions. These things, I'm not saying this because I'm a Republican, I'm not saying it because I'm a Democrat, I'm saying it because I'm concerned about us being spiritual, and we're not moving in that direction. Instead, we're making some of the same mistakes, and sometimes worse mistakes, that we've made before. And we don't want to be destroyers. We want to be constructors of our Creator. Now, you could say, well, how can you destroy the Creator? Well, we're going to destroy the Creator. We're going to destroy ourselves. We're going to destroy life. Life is the growth of our Creator. It's not the Creator itself. It's how the Creator grows. It shows that it would no longer grow unless that which it allows, but it doesn't force or control to create, does so. That does. And all other life around us. It's so wonderful. It's a great plan. Fantastic. Okay, listen, we're running out of time in this segment, so we're going to go to a break, a couple minutes. We'll be back. And when we come back, I'm going to go through some more concrete examples. I know I like to do a lot of the abstract stuff in the beginning of the show. All right, so we'll be back in a couple minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back. Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we're talking about the spiritual implication of individual versus group karma, part two. Yep, that's what we're doing. Okay, so let me continue on with some more concrete issues. Some of the things I was trying to get into, but we just ran out of time last week. Now, as most of you know, one of the topical areas that we're having right now is dealing with health care. I think I'll bring that one up. And I know they went on vacation and they didn't finish it and all that. It's okay. Frankly, I think they're on the wrong track, and that's what I'm going to talk to you about. One of the issues we have, and I brought this up again at the end of the show last week, is that if you're going to take care of people in a system in which you are reducing their responsibilities for both payment and self we'll say, care, and further, you're maybe reducing their choices. That's a really serious problem. Those are all ingredients for disaster, maybe even tyranny. Let me cut to the chase here and talk about this. Generally speaking, here are some principles that can be applied. It doesn't have to be just about health care. It can be about anything you want to apply them to. And that is, when you... we're attempting, and this is what I couldn't get out last week, when we're attempting to balance the two sides of our Creator's mind in what we're doing, the third part of our Creator's mind is the activity that we're going to be involved in. And when we put it into action, because this is an action universe, this particular universe is focusing in on teaching life how to become active. It's really important. Okay, so and active means interaction between life. So life becomes more one, but also individual at the same time. Wow. Very critical idea. More one, but individual, more greater individuality at the same time. This principle needs to be applied like with healthcare. If we're going to try to find a healthcare plan, we need to help people to function together as one, as a group. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, almost all healthcare plans involve group healthcare, you know, of some sort. But at the same time, it's supposed to help people to become individuals more. And if we're not helping them become more individual, which means more creative in all the aspects of their choices, allows them to become more economical on an individual scale, not just like, oh yeah, we're saving money in healthcare because the president said we're going to save money in healthcare. No, it's because each person is taking a greater level of responsibility to make sure that that happens. that's part of helping people to become independent. Otherwise, we can cause ourselves to lead to tyranny. Because what happens is this. Even though we think that we live in a great democracy where tyranny can never take place, if the individuals, the people, us, decide to not take responsibility for the laws that we allow or choose to be enacted to govern us, the results will be inevitably that those that are doing the governing, whether they have been elected this year or next or 10 years from now, eventually they'll become tyrannical. It's the nature of the equation. If we don't create more spiritual parts of ourselves and live more spiritually, we will not stay the same. We will inevitably move towards darkness. And that part of that darkness is tyranny. I'm not kidding you. And you know who knew that? The people who created this country. Nobody knew it more at the time that they did it than them. And maybe that's even true today. So this is a very critical thing. Don't think I'm kidding you about this. That we are facing this as a possibility. Not just about this one area, but all the decisions that seem to be being made could lead in this terrible direction. Okay, now, how do we avoid that? Well, it's not that hard. A health care plan, I'm just using this as an example, remember, because it happens to be the hot subject this month. A health care plan needs to be a plan in which the people are free to choose the type of health care they're going to get. And I'm talking way outside the box here. I'm not just talking about what most people think of freedom in health care. Like, oh, yeah, well, I can decide what doctor I'm going to see. Well, that's like a basic thing. But what if you decide you don't want to see a doctor? Maybe you want to see a witch doctor instead. Maybe you want to go and you find a Sufi. Or you want to have somebody do some kind of incantation or psychic event or whatever. Maybe there are other things that fall outside of what most people consider to be healthcare. But it's right for you. That needs to be part of the plan. As difficult as it may be for some of you to believe, I'm telling you that if you don't allow those kinds of things, the inevitability is that you will reduce the freedom of a significant number of people. Not because everybody wants to see a witch doctor, but how many of you out there want to take supplements and are interested in herbal remedies and have some interest in some other kinds like acupuncture, of treatment. How many? You'd be surprised. It might even be the majority. Because there's so many different things. No one group will take up even a fraction of the majority. But if you collect them together, it's huge. And I can almost guarantee you that a government-run single payer or otherwise, healthcare plan will eliminate, not just prevent, and not just pay for, but prevent those things from being available. Look at Hillary Care from 1993 and 4, and I think you'll be surprised what that plan included. Okay, so that's just an example. So we have to allow more freedom, not less, if we're going to increase the expansion of the ideas to make a larger group. Otherwise, the implications are that the karma that will come back to us will be disastrous. It could lead to tyranny. Tyranny would mean the end of this particular country. Tyranny would lead to insurrection and revolt, and the eventual destruction of our system and way of life. And I'm not just being in some way, we'll say, exaggerating, hyperbole, or whatever. None of those. I'm saying it what I think is truly a strong possibility. Let me continue now. I'm using the same example because I could keep using different examples, but unfortunately that will even take more time but even more confusing. So I'll stay with this example. All right, then what else do we need to do if we're going to be, really make this whole thing truly balanced in some spiritual way? Well, on the giving side, it needs to give to people in ways that are wise so that they become more giving. The plan should not just be one-sided, like, oh, this is your right. Here's your card. Go get health care whenever you think you're sick. No, it shouldn't be anything like that. Each person should be volunteering, should be trying to give to others in some fashion. If they don't want to do that, then they need to give money, because money is compressed time and energy. And if someone says, I don't want to devote my time and energy to giving that way, well, fine, then you'll have to give some more money. But for those that don't want to give the money and they are inclined, they need to be in some way more involved, not just in helping themselves to be healthy, but in helping others to try to do the same. And you can say, well, how can I help somebody become healthy? I'm not a doctor. Well, most of being healthy has nothing to do with doctors. Doctors are involved with people who are unwell. Those that are staying well, I need to follow many other issues in ways. So it really involves that. Maybe it means to join a quote-unquote spiritual, I'll call it spiritual, we would call it that, of course, if it's in our government plan, group of people who are trying to find as many ways as possible to improve their health and the health of all those who are choosing to do it with them. And they are literally experimenters in this way. They also are applying the newest and best methods to see if they really work and how they work together. So you see what I'm saying here. Another thing is to be particularly concerned about the squandering of resources, demanding that the least amount of resources be used in the most efficient ways in each and every procedure or givingness that they receive while participating in the health care plan, whatever it is. This needs to be a part of the plan itself. No, I'm not saying that there should be some board or group of politicians or whatever they want to call them, administrators, telling anybody to do anything about their health. Just the opposite. If you've got that, you're on the wrong path, going in the wrong direction. Remember, there has to be freedom. If you stop giving people freedom and start treating them like children or prisoners or however you want to treat them, then you have lost the very concept of what I'm talking about. Okay. Let's go further. Let's talk about some other parts. And remember, all these ideas can be applied to just about everything we're talking about. There should be no punishments. That's what I really dislike about cap and trade. There should be no punishments for those who fail to maintain health. In other words, you shouldn't say, oh, okay, well, you gained 20 pounds this month. So we're making you pay more for your insurance, and the next thing we're going to do is we're going to tell you what you can and can't eat, and you're going to be limited in this way. Oh, crazy stuff. That would be nuts, right? Not so nuts, because this is actually something that's been suggested in the last month or two. Okay, so what I would suggest, rather than to replace those kinds of crazy ideas, is that if a person is having any kind of difficulty, they're given a whole array of options, none of which they have to follow, to try to deal with the issues. So if it's to say you said, well, I'm a compulsive eater. Every time I get anxious, I eat more food, and then I get heavier, and then I got diabetes, and I got this and that, and all these heart disease. Okay, fine. Then let's give them options. Let's help those people by some of the volunteers that are doing better in that area. Remember, the people who are staying skinny, even when they get anxious? Those people have to help the people that aren't doing so well. They don't have to, but they can. That's their choice. I shouldn't say the word have to. But they need to be doing it. that reduces their karma, and it makes the whole group karma thing actually improve. So it really improves the situation. Those are the people that really should be in there doing something to help, be helpful. But nonetheless, even if everybody isn't, that's okay. Because there are some that will, and those people that are failing in any particular area are given options. Options that they can choose to take or ignore. But you give them so many options that they find, in most circumstances, it's not going to be 100%, but in most circumstances, that they can increase their choices, become more creative, and get some responsibility and control in the areas that they feel that they're out of control in. This is a wonderful way to build a spiritual country. This is the way we really want to be. I know this. In our hearts, this is what we want. We're going down the wrong road, folks. We're going down the road of materiality, of force, and possibly tyranny. That's not the road for us. Okay, what else? What else can we do that would improve the plan and make it much more, we'll say, spiritual? Again, we can't use this in our public ways of putting it because we try to keep that concept out of our public policies. I'm not sure that's really good, by the way, but that's part of our Constitution, at least as it is generally interpreted. You know, separation of church and state. This is not, to me, a churchy idea, but to some people it is. Okay. We have to respect that. Okay, so let's go on to the other parts that would be helpful in terms of our quote-unquote fantasy healthcare plan, right? The next thing is to reduce our karma. The government can sponsor, as part of the plan, any number of formal educational experiences that people can choose to put themselves into. The education can be general or it could be specific to problems that they may have. People can choose to... let's say someone has ulcers. Well, they can take a class on the stomach and ulcers of the stomach, because that's where their ulcers are. And they can learn about all the causes. They can learn about the present treatment modalities that are traditional and allopathic medicine. They can learn about alternative methods. They're given the opportunity to go to these classes. And they're either supplemented or in some cases free if they can't afford them at all. And this is all on a voluntary basis. Nobody's forced to go, but they feel then that they have more control over their situation when they're given this education, you see. And they are gaining something because they're doing this as a group and it reduces some of the group karma. They're not doing it just on an individual basis. They're actually doing it as a group. And they recognize and they're given credit for the fact that by participating in it, they're helping all the other people in the country who have that particular problem and have any kind of problem at all. They are part of the model of undoing some of the karma that's problematic. You see how this is kind of fitting together? I hope it's coming across that way. Okay, what about payment? Who's paying for all this stuff? Well, if it's part of the government, everybody's paying for it. But here's an interesting idea. Maybe the way we make healthcare isn't to make it that the rich, the 1%, the 2%, or whatever number you want to pick, are going to pay for all the poor. That is the most ridiculous idea on the planet. That is so stupid. You can't even get any more unreasonable than that. Because ultimately, you're rewarding people for being poor. Talk about an unwise idea. You know, they've tried that. They called it communism. It didn't work. You know? And it doesn't work because you don't want to have a system which destroys the principle of the first part of God's mind, of being creative, of having purpose. What purpose would there be if the way that you reward people is through giving them compressed time and energy, which is money, and you say, well, every time you get that money, we're going to take most of it away from you, because you don't deserve to be rich, and we're going to give it to the people who aren't exercising their creativity so that they will continue to not do so. That's a dumb idea, and it's already been proven not to work. Okay, so let's get a good idea then. What is a good idea? The good idea is that the wealthy have to contribute to helping those people who aren't wealthy and who are also ill to becoming wealthier. And they may have to give up a small portion of their wealth to do that, or they can contribute a tax. But I would prefer that they volunteer in some ways as a mentor and help others to become wealthier so they can afford the insurance. And if they can't do that, or they choose not to, because remember, this is all voluntary, then there's still some element that those that are capable, I'm not saying everybody's going to be capable, of making some proportionate payment. Obviously, some people will pay less than others will. That's okay. But you don't want to say, blindly, we're going to tax all the wealthy people. I mean, it's like, that's because it destroys the very concept of the first part of God's mind. And again, will lead to tyranny. As look at every communist country. You should go look and try to find a communist country or a fascistic country. They're very similar, by the way. That hasn't become tyrannical. It just hasn't happened, has it? See, and that's the whole point. Okay, so let's continue on. I know I'm beating up a lot of time here, but I want to take the time to develop these concepts because these are not easy things to understand, but we are mired in this right now. The reason it's coming out now is because this is the time. It's the energies that are focused on the planet. It's the culmination of hundreds and hundreds of years of development of civilization. This is a great time for us to be here if we can work this out. Now, does that mean that our present administration understands these things? I know. I think they don't understand them, but they're still going to work with them no matter what. Okay, some final ideas because we're running out of time here. What about the idea then of there being no rationing? You know, this idea that, well, okay, if everybody has free access, then why, you know, we're going to have rationing? No. I don't buy that. What I suggest is the following, that a person's needs are always addressed based upon the relative importance of whatever health issues they have, not that there's ration. So if someone can pay $25 to go do whatever it might be to get a vaccination, that the government would normally, quote-unquote, pay for on their universal health care, well, let them pay that. That shouldn't be something the government should be involved in whatsoever. But in terms of catastrophic health care, where a person got hit by a car or had a serious disease that maybe they created for themselves, okay, if you want to believe in karma, and I do, that they had something to do with it somewhere down the line, maybe in a prior lifetime. But the point is, they have this terrible disease, and it's going to cost them $150,000 to be treated in some way. Well, that should be treated. That's what I'm saying. That should be treated. But the little things, that's, believe it or not, the most expensive part of healthcare. Everybody runs to the doctor every time. You know, oh, my finger hurts. I'm going to go to the doctor. Because it doesn't cost them anything. That's where you don't want to have the healthcare. Because, or at least universal health care, because those kinds of things almost immediately do start producing rationing. And what do you ration? Strangely, the rationing isn't about going to the doctor because you got an achy finger. The rationing comes when you do need the serious operation and you're waiting in line until you die. That's the problem. You see, it's upside down. It's completely crazy backwards. Okay, well, there's a lot more to explain about that but I'm out of time. I'm just out of time. So, anyway, let me see what else I got to say. I got about a minute left. And let me just say that if you want to talk to me, if you want to have any communication, go to thoughts@whylifeis.com. You can email me. And if you're interested in our website, agelesswisdom.com, it's a spiritual group that I'm a member of, and you can go ahead and find out more information about that, which is very interesting. Also, if you haven't already heard about it, check out at foreveryoungproducts.com. Ideal cell sorption resveratrol. I've been using it, getting great results, and so have a bunch of other people. I truly recommend you give it a shot. Anyway, we're out of time for right now. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.